Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I am your host today, Michelle Berquist, on Women Who Lead Radio for our show, and I want to introduce our leading lady today, somebody that I am extremely excited to interview, and I want to introduce all of our listeners to Susan Fowler, who is the Senior Consulting Partner and author with the Ken Blanchard Companies. And just for our listeners, you need to know this woman, this amazing woman, has authored almost six books on leadership, and we have an absolute gem on the radio today. So, Susan, just say hello to all of our listeners and welcome to the show.
I'm smiling from ear to ear. What a sweet, wonderful introduction. Thank you.
And not real polished, but we get the job done is what I always say. So, you know, I try to be a little edgy and real. But I know, you know, first of all, I'm so excited to have you on the show because I know you have a very particular kind of point and mission and the whole thing about how motivating people doesn't work in business and under leadership. And I'm really curious just what your thoughts are and why motivating doesn't work, because I will tell you, I hear it all the time in corporate America that people go, we need to motivate our staff, we need to motivate our team members. And I'm like, you know, that's a self-driving principle. Can you kind of go over why motivating people doesn't work or never has or never will? I'm really curious.
I think all of the above, never has, never will, and doesn't now. And but the answer is it may be a little bit different than what people think, and that is the reason that motivating people doesn't work is because people are already motivated. People are always motivated. The question is why. What's the reason for their motivation? And so our traditional paradigm of motivation has proven to be totally erroneous. The motivation science that is just so compelling has shown that motivation is not a quality that someone has. It's not a quantity that someone has. It is a quality that someone has. So in other words, it's not, you know, like you don't say, oh, how much motivation do you have? What we need to start to say is, what's the quality of your motivation? And so we've been able to identify six different types of motivation that people experience all the time. And like, if people understand and can identify what their motivational outlook is, then there are really amazing implications for the different types of motivation. And then we can start to choose which motivation would be more appropriate. And we can just have a different quality experience when we begin to understand that.
And I love this, and so you have to know about me. I'm like Curious George on so many levels, so I have like 20,000 questions coming out my ears. But when you talk about these six different types, are these types that people will kind of self-assess, or is it that employers can take, you know, staff or team members and take them through a process to find out what motivates them? Can you explain a little bit more about that? Because I'm like, well, where does the, you know, kind of like, how do you find the six different types? Or is it all in your book and we have to tell everyone, of course, to get your book? I know that's part of it.
Well, I've been told that the book outlines it pretty well. And so I'm very excited about that. And what's exciting, maybe what's the revolutionary idea or the evolutionary idea here, is that motivation is a skill. So motivation is a skill that can be taught and learned and nurtured and sustained. So we actually do that. We actually teach people how do you identify the type of motivation that you have, and then how do you shift it if it's suboptimal. And if you're a leader, how do you begin to recognize and identify other people's motivational outlooks, and how do you have motivational outlook conversations with them so that you can actually help them shift? So this skill, especially from a leader's perspective, is a foundational skill. It should be something that leaders know how to do before they learn how to coach, before they learn how to facilitate problem solving. You know, to coach or problem solve or action plan or goal set, to do any of those things with people who are suboptimally motivated, it's just like building castles, not in sand, but on sand. They're just not going to stand.
You know, it's funny, and this is a little twist on, I think, what you're getting to, and tell me if I'm on the right page. So as an example, I know for me and some of the alliance partners that I have with other professionals, many times they'll say, oh, Michelle, you know, we'll offer a referral fee for X or Y or Z. And I'm like, you know, for me, that's never been my motivation. It's the fact that I can connect people to opportunity, and it's like my reputation and street credit with my relationships goes up a point when I can connect them with wonderful people. So money is not always the driving force. Even though I love money, I want to put that out there just so everybody knows. It's okay to love it, but I think in this scenario, that's what you're talking about, right? Is money is not always the motivator. There might be other things. Everybody rolls a different way, and if you're going to, you can't motivate people. You have to know about them. Is that where we're going with this?
Well, yes and no. So here's the thing. Money motivates people, and you just alluded to that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, money
mm-hmm.
motivates people. So does power. So does status. We see that a lot in our world. So those things motivate people. The question is, what's the quality of that motivation? And what the research shows is that if the reason for your motivation, for example, doing that referral, is because you want that incentive, then that is the first roadblock you come to. If it doesn't work or whatever, you're going to give up. You're not going to be able to sustain any positive effort when you are motivated through external means, and that's the external motivational outlook, or as a lot of parents try to motivate people or leaders in organizations try to motivate people with pressure, tension, stress, fear. Those things motivate people too. And if somebody is doing something out of fear or pressure, they will not do their best work, they will not be creative or innovative, and they will not sustain that energy. So what the research says is all of these things motivate people, but there's alternatives. And the alternatives are the healthy alternative to what I just described, which were are suboptimal reasons for being motivated.
And here's a question for you. Do you actually consult with companies on this and do the training on how to get, you know, how to motivate teams and, you know, the company culture to have better motivated employees, or is it just with the book and the speaking? Kind of give us a little bit about you and how this whole book came about and what your findings really have been, because I think you've got, I mean, I know you've written a ton of books through the Ken Blanchard book, but how did this book come about, and are you seeing this in corporate America that they just aren't doing it right, or where did your motivation come from?
Oh my gosh, what a great question. How much time do we have?
Yeah, I know. I got 20 others. No, I'm teasing.
This starts back in 1990. No, actually, it does start back in the early 90s. I just have to share this with you. I became a vegetarian overnight. I was a fish and meat lover, but I saw something on television. It was a documentary about the way we treat the animals that we eat. And overnight, I stopped eating, you know, anything that ever had a parent or eyes or whatever. And people said, oh, my gosh, you're so disciplined. And I thought, no, this hasn't required any discipline whatsoever. I mean, that was over 35 years ago. And to this day, I'm a vegetarian. And I thought, wow, how did that happen? How was something that was so central to my being as in terms of eating and loving meat and fish, how did I just stop like that? What was my motivation? And I really was searching for an answer. And then I came across the work of Dr. Edward Deci, who is really the father of intrinsic motivation and self-determination theory. And so this is back in the early 90s. I started reading his work, doing the research, and then I realized that there was so much compelling research around this and that most people didn't know about it. And I set a goal in the early 2000 that I wanted to be the person that took this research and made it accessible to people, and not just make them aware of the research, but give them a way to use it. Because my whole thing is about being practical. My whole thing is about application. And so I've just in the last 6 weeks, I've been to Israel and Russia and all over the United States and Canada. The Canadian Olympic team is using my book. One of the coaches told me he just coached two of the women athletes, freestyle skiers, to gold and silver using the principles in my book. The head of the major financial institution in terms of financial planning and investments read my book and flew me to New York in the 50th floor penthouse. And you know, I then worked with his 200 top people, and now we're rolling. So we're working at an organizational level. We're working at the leadership level, training these skills to leaders, and we're working at the individual level to give the skill to individuals so that when they have a company that says, we're going to give you an incentive to do this, how do you internalize that so that it's not an external motivational approach, but you take that information in as data and shift your own motivation and do it for the right reasons?
Right. Oh, gosh. You know, I mean, because there's so much out there, you know, find your, you know, have a why for your company culture. It's like, you know, I mean, I remember back in the days in the 80s when it's like I was in corporate America and it was always a carrot and a stick, you know what I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about, thinking that that was what the motivation was. And I'm, you know, I guess this comes to a bigger question is, what are you finding as the biggest challenges that these companies have when you're brought in to serve? So, you know, I mean, they're reading your book, and what, can you share a couple of what these, just in case our listeners are working within an organization that maybe they're finding the same type of challenges or issues, what are you finding is the biggest, you know, kind of tipping point where companies go, you know, Susan, we need you. This is what we're struggling with.
And you know what? Every company is going to be challenged with this. We're on the cutting edge of doing things differently. But people default. So if a deadline is necessary, they tend to think, okay, I've got to pressure people into making this deadline. Or if we want people to do something and we're not sure they're going to do it, we better give them a prize or run a contest or do a competition. And so that's our default because of the whole carrot and stick. You know, the stick is giving an incentive, a reward, a prize, appraising. The stick is putting pressure and fear into people. And so that's going to be our default because that's what we've been doing for so long. And that came out of the behavioral studies in the early 40s when they did all these experiments on animals. So kind of a funny thing happened on the way to studying human motivation. We had to learn about pigeons and whales and all the other kinds of things before we finally realized that, you know, people are not pigeons. And we don't do things just because we get a pellet. But if we do things just because we get a pellet, we don't thrive. And I think, Michelle, that this is the biggest – so there's some beliefs that are in the workplace that are the biggest stumbling blocks. So if you believe the purpose of an organization is to make a profit instead of to serve its customers and its people, if you believe that it's not personal, it's just business. And so you don't believe that people bring their whole selves to work, and you don't care if they thrive mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually at work. If you have some basic beliefs, and in my book, Chapter 6, I actually outline 5 of the most eroding beliefs that I don't care where I am in the world. I don't care what translator is there translating into what language or from what language into another language. I can use these sentence stems. It's not business, it's just, and people can fill in the blank. The primary purpose of business is to make money. We need to hold people accountable.
Oh my gosh, keep going, I'll answer them with
you. Yeah, leaders are in a position of power. You know, so you look at the belief systems that we have, and so what my challenge is when I'm working at the top level of organizations is to challenge the leaders, like, is that a belief you have? And if so, are you willing mm-hmm. to change that belief? Because values are based on beliefs, and beliefs and values can be changed. So so that's the biggest challenge, is dealing with belief systems.
I love that. I mean, it really is. Because, you know, when you kind of hear these little nuggets and you go, gosh, this is kind of business or mindset changing, you know, that's what leads to, right, action and actual behavior in a different way. And I'm curious, would you mind sharing, and I want to give everybody a chance to get your book here, but what can you share what those 6 different types of different types of motivators? I don't think we went through those, and I know they're in the book,
didn't.
But just to kind of share with our listeners what those are.
Yeah, I would love to, and I would love for them to be thinking as you're sitting there, either listening to this radio broadcast, or you're getting ready for a meeting that you're going to go to, or you're thinking about a project or a goal that you have. You know, just ask yourself which of these six motivational outlooks you might be experiencing for any of the goals or projects that you're working on. The first is, and by the way, we have this in a model called the Spectrum of Motivation, and the model is both descriptive. It describes these six motivational outlooks, but it's also prescriptive. How, you know, what do you do if you want to change your motivational outlook? So the first motivational outlook is called disinterested, and this is where this is the one that most people are experiencing in organizations that are going through big changes. Because what organizations typically do is they announce a change. They say, here's what we're going to do, and here's why, and here's how it's going to benefit the organization. We should all rah-rah, be happy about it. But the research on change says, but wait a minute, the thing that people really are concerned about when change happens is what's going to happen to them. How is the change going to affect them? And that's what most organizations fail to delve into. So people feel overwhelmed. They don't know how to cope with ambiguity. They don't know how to deal with uncertainty, and so they become disinterested. So it's like the people that have quit and stayed in your organization. They're just waiting for everything to pass by so that, you know, then maybe they'll deal with it if they have to, but they're going to try and not deal with it. So that's a disinterested motivational outlook. It's totally de-energizing.
I can totally visualize that person. I mean, you know, because I went through five mergers and acquisitions.
Oh, my gosh.
But you could tell the people that just checked out, you know, they're not engaged. But at any rate, I don't need to interrupt you. Okay, that's number one.
Absolutely. Number two is called the external motivational outlook, and that's the one we were talking about, when the reason that you're doing whatever you're doing is because you're saying, I'm glad they pay me to do this, you know. So if you weren't getting paid, you probably wouldn't want to do it. Or it's a salesperson who says, oh, wow, we got this new product, and I get a big incentive, you know, for selling this product, so I'm going to put my energy there. You know, then what happens when the incentive is taken away? You know, then why do you sell it? And so the external motivational outlook is when you're doing something for either a tangible or an intangible reward. So the problem with children, for example, but this happens in the workplace as well, is that there's this thing called conditional regard where, a parent, for example, might say, oh, do this for Mommy. Mommy will be so happy if you do this. Or, the leader says, do this one for the Gipper. You know, do this one for me. And so it's kind of like, oh, if I don't do it for you, you won't love me as much. Or I'm going to do this because I want your love. So external rewards are either tangible rewards or they're intangible rewards. They're the praising or the power or the status that comes from what you're doing. And then, and that's really so prevalent in the workplace. But I think that the motivational outlook that we experience the most is called the imposed motivational outlook. And that is when we do things because we feel like we have to. You know, And in one of our strategies is to ask, you know, if you're feeling like, oh, I have to do this, is to simply ask yourself why. Why do I have to do this? And if you ask yourself enough why questions, you get to the root of why you feel like you need to do it, and then you can start to deal with it. But, you know, Michelle, we do this to ourselves, and tell me if you've ever done this. You want to have a meeting, maybe even lunch. So you send out a meeting maker, and then a couple weeks later, it comes up on your calendar, and you go, oh, crap, I've got to go to that meeting. Or, oh, man, I've got to go to that lunch today. You're the one that set it up. You set up the meeting maker.
You know, I'd be lying if I said that never happened, but I'm like, okay, authenticity. Yes, I do it too.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah, and so that's the imposed motivational outlook. So anytime we feel fearful, whenever we feel pressure, so we're afraid of what might happen if we don't do something. That's the imposed motivational outlook. So those are the three suboptimal motivational outlooks, disinterested, external, and imposed. And the research shows that you are less likely to achieve your goals. You are less creative. You're less innovative. You don't have a sense of well-being when you're in those motivational outlooks. And they cannot sustain your energy over time. It's like the junk food of motivation. You might get a little burst of energy, but then your blood sugar is going to drop precipitously, and then it's like, oh, my God, what do I do?
Yeah, and this is fascinating. Well, I was just going to say, and it's like, do you want to share the other the should we say? Because I want to make sure we get in here and go, okay, Susan. So we would love for people to get the book, because I've downloaded it on my Kindle and I've started reading it and going, oh my gosh, it's got such great information in it from even me as a manager of other people, you know, and I'm always like wondering what motivates us. And I love that, because we always want to, you know, be better, do better, all that. But if people, if all of our listeners are interested, number one, how can they reach you? And do they just get the book on Amazon, or tell everybody how they can reach you and if they want to raise their hand and find you?
Yeah. Well, one of the things is, if you're curious about these six motivational outlooks, the other three are called aligned, integrated, and inherent. Then what you might want to do is go to my website, and I have a free motivational outlook assessment. And so you just you can use any goal you want to. There's different types of goals you can choose from, and you, it's just 18 questions, and you get immediate response back on what your motivational outlook is. And then if you want to know more about that motivational outlook, feel free. It'd be wonderful if you want my book. It is on Amazon. It's bestseller now. I'm so pleased. And so
congratulations. That's a big deal.
I'm really thrilled. Really thrilled with it. It's been a great journey. And you know, when you write about something, you have to practice it. And then when you find out it really, really works, it's wonderful.
That's pretty good.
And so I'm like looking at my bookshelf now, and, you know, it's been translated in so many different languages now, in Polish and Hungarian and Russian and Spanish. And, you know,
it's amazing.
It's a thrill. Korean. Yeah, it's really a thrill. It's available on Amazon.
And we want to make sure your website is SusanFowler.com, correct?
Yeah. That's it.
For them to take the assessment. And so I'll make sure all of our listeners have it. It's Susan, S-U-S-A-N, Fowler, F as in Frank, OWLER.com. So, yeah, please take the assessment and obviously buy the book, because it's amazing. If you deal with people and, I don't know, even as a parent, right, you're sharing some of the things that parents maybe should do differently as well. Sounds like it's cool.
Well, you know what? I'm actually writing a book called Why Motivating Children Doesn't Work and What Does with two parenting experts. So I'm really excited about that book.
So you mean incentives like candy and like money when they get older doesn't work for kids? I'm like, what? No, I'm teasing.
It's so sad. I mean, we have to bribe kids to graduate from school when, in fact, learning is one of the things they love to do most, and we systematically erode their love of learning. And so that's the point I want to make about parents and leaders, and that is we have the best of intentions, but because we haven't understood this stuff, because it's been proven for 60 years. I mean, the wealth of research is just extraordinary, but it's just now getting into mainstream. And so there's actually a conference in October on it's a motivation and engagement summit using these ideas and applying it specifically to business. And they've asked me to be the keynote speaker for that, because I think, you know, me and my colleagues, we have been on the cutting edge of doing our own research. We've actually, you know, we do our own primary research, but we've also just been on the cutting edge of applying it. And, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road.
I love that. And for you, it's like this motivation and engagement summit is, can you share the details? I mean, I would imagine listeners that want to know about it. So.
Yeah, and if anybody wants, I have a newsletter, and I've got one that's going out next week, and, you know, don't worry, you know, you don't get bugged by it. But about every 6 weeks, I send out a newsletter. And so if you want it, you can subscribe on my website. But all the details will be in the newsletter. It's in Orlando, Florida on October 6th and 7th. And Dr. Edward Deci and Dr. Richard Ryan, who are the founders of self-determination theory, LA Times said, you know, they gave a Nobel Prize for, you know, this kind of stuff, they should win the Nobel Prize. I honestly, and I agree with that, I think that what they're learning through this research, what we're learning through it, could literally change the world. And, you know, I don't want to get too, but I look at what's
happening. You're getting out here going, woo! Yeah.
Well, you know what, I look what's happening on television today with all the mass killings. I look at what's happening with terrorism. And at the root cause of all of that is that people's psychological needs are not being satisfied. And And wow. Our basic nature is we want to thrive. Human beings want mm-hmm. to thrive. And so when they act out, whether it's a bully in high school, whether it's a terrorist, whether it's somebody acting out, you know, through violence or even through verbal abuse, it's because they're longing for something. We're all longing for something, and we didn't understand what it was until this research that has discovered that every human being on the planet, regardless of gender, generation, culture, race, it doesn't matter. We all have the psychological needs for autonomy, relatedness, and competence. And the research is so clear that when those psychological needs are satisfied, people thrive. They have a sense of well-being, both physically, mentally, and it's profound. And this is something we can affect as parents, as teachers, as leaders. We can actually create homes, schools, and workplaces where people's psychological needs are being satisfied. And we can learn the skill for ourselves so that no matter what we're facing, no matter what challenges, because the world's never going to be perfect, how do right. you internalize that world differently? And we can teach people how to do that.
I can tell you're very passionate, Susan, in what you do, and it comes through. No, and it's a good thing. I mean it is a sincere compliment, because I do think it's like, you know, no matter what we do, it's like whether we're, I don't know, just everything that we do, and, you know, the whole social media thing now, it's like we're all in the people business. We engage. We have to interact with people, and it's like I agree. I think just some of those things have really kind of gone down the slippery slope that, you know, kind of makes me sad when I think about it, because we all are about, you know, as a world, we're about people. So, hey, here's my last question. I can't believe we're almost out of time. And I really won't have that much time on it because, you know, our focus is for women and leading mm-hmm. in business and being more, you know, more successful, you know, and bettering their best. It's like, what are there any differences in what you see gender-wise of women versus men and how they're motivated? Any science or studies on that or any thoughts on that in your opinion of how women are motivated differently, or are they?
Well, and this is going to be a no and yes answer as I listen to your question. Because it is our human nature to want to thrive, and because we know that the essence of thriving means satisfying our needs for autonomy, relatedness, and competence, which I call ARC, A-R-C, just for easy. So it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, or a child or an adult, or, you know, from Timbuktu or San Diego, you have the same psychological needs. Now, what I think does interest me a lot from a female perspective is right. that nature of relatedness, that I think that what's happened is that we've got workplaces that were created after World War II, where the leadership came from the military, and that we created these workplaces that were devoid of emotion. And yet mm-hmm. we know that people act emotionally. The primary way that people make decisions every single day is through their affect or their emotion. And yet we have these workplaces where we're not supposed to talk about emotion or deal with emotions. And so I think this is a real opportunity for women to understand that we actually have a greater opportunity, given our role in society and even probably some of our physiology, to enhance relatedness at work. And relatedness at work could look like being a good listener. It can be empathy. I just saw some studies on mindfulness and empathy. And, you know, Obama said back in 2006 that one of the greatest things missing in the world today, and that's causing a lot of our problems, is people's ability to be empathetic. And so I think that those are strengths that women bring. So autonomy, relatedness, competence, I think that women have a real opportunity to find ways of making workplaces where people have a greater sense of relatedness, and that means a sense of meaning, belonging, connectedness at work. Because the research says if you're not getting your relatedness needs met at work, there is no such thing as compensatory need satisfaction. In other words, you're not going to get that need met outside of work. So if we're going to have healthy people, healthy communities, a healthy society, a healthy world, we okay. have got to have organizations where people feel they belong, a sense of meaning, and they're connected interpersonally with each other.
you know, I don't know how to end the show on any other note than that, because I'm just like, I'm so inspired and fueled by what you just shared, because it is about, I mean, there is a way to change the world and change the results. And Susan, I want to say thank you so much. Any final, like, last little comment? Because I don't know how you could, like, you know, give me one more better than that one. This was amazing. Any other final thoughts for the show, for our listeners?
Well, first of all, thank you, because your questions are great, and I love your enthusiasm, and it kind of rubs off on me. I just think that as a leader, I think you really need to realize that you cannot motivate anyone else, that what you really need is the skill to facilitate other people's motivation, but you will never gain that skill if you don't have it for yourself first. How can you motivate someone in a performance review if you're suboptimally motivated to do performance reviews? So leaders heal yourself. You know, you've got to go through your work with optimal motivation if you ever hope to create employees or a staff that's optimally motivated.
Girl, I need a dose of you every day. I'm just going to say thank you, Susan, for being on our show and to our listeners.
Thank you.
It's like, please get the book. It's like, it's an amazing book. And, you know, go to Susan Fowler's website, which is, again, SusanFowler.com. The book is Why Motivating People Doesn't Work and What Does. And to all of our listeners, thank you always for your loyalty. And, Susan, you are an amazing leading lady today. And I want to share that, you know, we're here every Friday and Monday morning. And next Friday for our Women Who Lead show is I am delighted to have our next leading lady, who will be Georgia Zachary, who is the president of the Women of AT&T. This is an amazing affiliate group within the AT&T organization where they have women's leadership programs. It's an affinity group that has thousands of women who are involved in AT&T. And Georgia Zachary was on the cover of our most recent Women Lead magazine, so we're delighted to have her on the show, and where she will talk about the power of passion, purpose, and perspective. So I think it'll be a good show. To our listeners, it's Friday. Please have a great weekend, and, you know, as we always say, we just hope you will go and take a moment to support another woman, because that's how we can move the needle forward. We'll see you next time. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.